everyone. I'm Tom Zavisky, grateful alcoholic. It's a privilege to be here tonight. It truly is. I hear people in meetings sometimes say, you know, there's no guarantees in Alcoholics Anonymous, and our friend Tom read the guarantee tonight. You know, nothing will so much as ensure immunity against taking another drink as intensive work with other alcoholics. Brings to mind another thing I many times heard in AA meetings, that there's no cure for alcoholism. And if there wasn't a cure for alcoholism, I wouldn't be wasting my time to be at an AA meeting tonight. But it's that guarantee of intensive work with other alcoholics, that bring me down here. If you really want to read Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill Wilson was cited as saying, by Bill D., alcoholic number three. One day Bill and his, was 12-stepping Bill at the kitchen table, and Bill D.'s wife was sitting at the table with Bill W. Bill W. leaned over to her, and she said, and he told her, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it. And Bill D. said, that should be our golden rule to Alcoholics Anonymous, that God has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I want to carry the message, keep telling people about it, and that should be our golden rule in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's one of the reasons I accepted the invitation tonight. My sobriety date, April 4th, 1995. My home group is North Park Fellowship in Fresno, California. I met a young gal that in about 2 weeks is going to move back to Fresno, and she lives just down the street from my home group. And I certainly encourage her that our doors are open, except for Tuesday night when we have the men's tag meeting. We do have a women's meeting on Saturday morning up there, though, and I understand it's pretty good. Anyway, it is a privilege to be here tonight. I don't really go in too much with my drunkalogue other than the basics. I started drinking at the age of 12, and for the next 37 years I had to drink even when I didn't want to. I still very clearly remember that first afternoon and I drank. I grew up on a ranch in central Kansas and I was about 12 years old. It was roundup time. It was about this time of the year. So if I'm 63 now, you can see how many years ago it was when I took that first drink. And what was common in those days was all the ranchers would help everybody with the roundup before the winter snow set in. And, at the end of the day, they'd all gather around a fire or stove somewhere, somebody's kitchen, and, have a few drinks to bring closure to a day of honest work. And that particular year, you know, my dad thought I was old enough to ride a cutting horse. I was pretty good at it. And at the end of the day, I decided to join those men, and have a couple of drinks. And I tell you what, alcohol was magic. It did for me what I never believed. Suddenly I wasn't that 12-year-old kid anymore. I was a 21-year-old man in my head. And, I chased that elusive effect for the next 37 years of my life, just like it tells us in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a functioning alcoholic. Kind of interesting, that in that 37 years, I never lost a job, never got a DUI, never went to jail. But by the time I'd gotten to AA, I had lost, my money, my property, my prestige, my wife, and my kids. And then I go to an AA meeting, and you tell me how you lost jobs, how you got DUIs, how you went to jail. And I'm going to sit there, my first AA meeting and tell you how I drank responsibly for all these years, because none of that ever happened to me. Well, it's kind of hard, if you don't know much about alcoholism, to admit that you're a real alcoholic, and I didn't feel like, I fit in. But somebody after that meeting, grabbed me and said, a bunch of us after the AA meeting, we go down the street for coffee, so... I went down the street with them, and they sat there and they told their stories and talked about AA a lot. And I had a sense that for whatever reason, those individuals cared more about my welfare than they did about theirs. And one of those gentlemen handed me Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book, told me to read the first 164 pages, plus the doctor's opinion, told me to read each word slowly and chew and digest it like a good piece of meat. I went home that night, what had happened to me, you know, I was going through a pretty nasty divorce. I found out my wife had been having an affair, and I caught him. I caught her and my boss in the bedroom when I came home early one afternoon. And believe me, the only thing I could see was red. And I wanted to kill both of them. And I remember vaguely my daughter coming home from school, coming through the front door of the house, screaming at me and realizing I had a butcher knife in my hand and my wife backed in the corner in the kitchen. And the only thing I wanted to do was kill her. That was the beginning of the end. I saw a part of me that afternoon I never, ever want to see again. You know, and I knew something was wrong. I knew I needed some kind of help. And, you know, so I started checking out, you know, some professionals. And the professional knew a little bit about AA, you know, but it took her about 6 weeks of visits twice a week, you know, to get to whether or not, you know, I had a drinking problem. She asked me, you know, if I drank. I said, yeah, occasionally. She said, well, how much did you drink? I said, one or two. You know, we alcoholics are. Actually, you know, it was one or two six-packs. Sometimes it was a whole case of beer, you know, in one night. You know, we'd get real honest. She suggested maybe I go to AA meetings, you know, and I went to that first one. Was given that book. And I remember reading the first 164 pages, doctor's opinion. Not a lot of it made sense, but, you know, I was still withdrawing from alcohol. You know, I still had the shakes. I was still coming down. But seven words in that book caught my attention, and those were the words, relieve me of bondage of self. Now, I understand, you know, they're in our third step prayer, but those words made sense to me. I read the first 164 pages probably about 3 days after I was given that book, after attending my first AA meeting. This was a Saturday afternoon. This was about April 7th. And read the book. That Friday I had a court date. The judge awarded my ex-wife the house, half my salary, half my assets. And I said, Jesus Christ, you know, she commits the sin and she gets the reward. And something went through my mind, you know, that, you know, if I couldn't have that house, it was mine, nobody was going to get it. And I had the idea I was going to go over to the house and destroy it. And I did. I went over to the house. And I went through the garage. And my ex-wife wasn't home, thank God. But somehow I grabbed my .38 revolver, and I don't even remember it. And I was standing, you know, in front of the door with that .38. Something went through my head saying, Tom, don't do anything stupid. Don't make a bad situation worse. And I realized that .38 was pressed up against my head. My finger was on the trigger. If you're as serious an alcoholic as we were, there is no middle-of-the-road solution. You know, we try to blot out of consciousness the best we can the intolerable situation of our life. At that point, we have two alternatives. For me, those two alternatives was drop the hammer and end my life. But when I heard that voice saying, Tom, don't do anything stupid, I dropped to my knees, laid that gun down, and demanded, God help me. My life's out of control. Well, I certainly hope there was a power greater than myself at that moment that could save my sick ass. And I went to an AA meeting that night, and a fellow that gave me that book was there, and I told him what happened that afternoon. And he looked at me and he said, Tom, are you ready? I said, ready for what? He said, step four. I didn't know anything about the steps. I saw them on the wall. I didn't think anybody in their right mind could do all of that. You know, I didn't have time to write my autobiography. I certainly didn't want to share pieces of my life with another human being. You know, it wasn't any of their damn business. And I wasn't going to apologize to those people that pissed me off and cheated me. You know, they didn't deserve it. You know, so that was my concept of the steps. But when I told him that story that afternoon, And I hope in a way that I told you tonight, he sensed that I had completed the first and second step of Alcoholics Anonymous without even realizing it, because I made the ultimate surrender. I came to admit my life was out of control at that moment. That's step one. That's step two. All I had to do was make a decision to get off my rear end and start writing an autobiography in step four. And he helped me with that. You know, the big book has a lot of promises in it. We read about 12 of them. We call them the nightstick promises, but I think the book's got 160-some different promises in it. Some of them are very wonderful promises. Some of them are admonitions, you know, or warnings, you know, what happens to us. But I remember, with about 7 weeks of sobriety, I was with my sponsor doing my fifth step. You know, and the big book tells us, and there's a solution, you know, we will be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, which we won't even believe. And I remember I did the best I could with the steps. I tried to get as honest as I could. My sponsor told me to start with the things that are bothering me the most. Don't try to go back through my whole life. Just the things that are bothering me, the resentments, the anger, the fears that are most prevalent in my life right now at this moment. And he said, go from there. You know, more will be revealed. And that's where I started. You know, I started with the wife, my boss, a couple of coworkers at work. That's how I started my fourth step. It wasn't very long. And I did that with my sponsor. I went through that. You know, I listed my fears. I went through a sexual inventory. And when we were finished, you know, my sponsor talked a little bit about life in general. And we just sat there for about an hour. The big book says, you know, after we do step five, we sit quietly for an hour, reviewing everything to make sure, you know, that we've done the best we can. And then all of a sudden, you know, he said, are you ready for step six and seven? You know, we got to identify those defects of character. I hadn't seen those defects of character I had. So I pulled out the 12 and 12, and somewhere on page 49, it listed those things that I didn't like, the seven deadly sins, pride, greed, lust, anger, gluttony, envy, laziness. Holy crap. You know, it dawned on me when I was reading that, and he pointed them out to me, that I could recognize those defects of character in every one of you people, and I despised them. And really, what it was I despised those same defects of character in myself. You know, that was why I was always on a collision course with other human beings. I didn't develop those character defects, instantaneously. They developed over a period of time. I wasn't born with them. You know, when I was born, God gave me and every other living human being, and even the animal kingdom, you know, three basic instincts to survive. An instinct to be social, you know, the herd instinct fit in, we form armies, you know, we like to come to in groups and AA meetings, that's part of that herd instinct, that's social, being social. I wanted out there drinking, I had to drink to be social, I always said I was a social drinker, because I couldn't be social unless I had a few in me. Security, having that roof over our head, food on the table, clothes on our back, you know, animals travel in herds. Maybe it's cold and wet outside, animals find a hole in the ground, maybe a crack in a tree or a cave, and, you know, they're perfectly happy. You know, for me, the house was never big enough. I didn't have enough boats, swimming pool, needed to be deeper and bigger, and I started to develop this greed, these defects of character. When I was born, you know, I had natural instincts. When my diaper needed to be changed, I'm sure I raised holy hell. And Mom did something, you know. If I was hungry, I'm sure I raised holy hell and she shoved a bottle in my mouth, you know. That appeased me. A little later on, you know, when I got old enough to walk and talk, Mom would take me to the supermarket. I wanted that candy bar, and Mom said, no, son, you can't have that. You know, I learned if I screamed and made noise and stomped my feet, you know, and had a fit, eventually she'd break down and she'd buy me that candy bar. She was my enabler, you know, if I got my way. You see, I developed those defects of character. You see, little trial error, walking on people's toes, you know, getting some attention. Of course, then, you know, he gave all of us the instinct to ask to expropriate, you know, and I started that one at a very early age, too. But those were all things, you know, that I developed over a period of time. And when God removed these defects of character, I'll guarantee he didn't take them away from me. I still have many of them. But it was like, you know, when I looked at those defects of character, remember those little flashcards we had in grade school, you know, with the math problems on them? 2 + 2 = 4 and 3 × 2 = 6. Well, now I have these little 7 cards laid out. You know, pride, greed, lust, anger, gluttony, envy, laziness. So now they're not buried. Today I can look at them. And that's what I have to do when I get to 6, 10, 11. You know, when I continue to seek through mere prayer and meditation, when I continue to take personal inventory one day at a time. But I guarantee you, when I finished that fifth step, you know, with my sponsor that afternoon, it was like the weight of the world was taken off my shoulders. Relieved me of bondage of self. You know, suddenly that jailhouse door that was up here between the ears kind of started to open up. You know, my life started to change. It was in step 9. I had, a pretty good list of step 8. In fact, you know, I still think of things today after nearly 15 years of being sober. You know, some people I've harmed that I've got to go back and, you know, make some kind of amends to. They still pop into my head occasionally. I did one not too long ago to a fellow classmate of mine when I was in college. You know, I did something to him that was never on my 4-step list. I didn't have a resentment, but I certainly owed him an amends after all these years. And I went to every effort, you know, to find him on the internet, Google search. God has a funny way of working things out. Then I got a directory from the university. I graduated, and there was his name. After graduating, you know, 25 years earlier, and I gave him a call. And he'd forgotten about it. But see, I had to do it. You know, I had to make those amends. I had to make peace with myself. I started making amends right away, you know, and that was, you know, I made some of the simple ones first. I had a lot of financial amends to make. I came in here with about $75,000 of unsecured debts. You know, I had to humble myself and, you know, contact some creditors. And we worked out some programs and some plans. And I managed to pay those debts off. Took about 5 years to do it. But, you know, when it was all done, it was a nice relief. It was freedom. Still had this problem with my ex-wife. Went through all these steps. I was doing a lot of 12-step work. I was going to a lot of AA meetings. I was working with PICPC, working with H&I. Still wanted to kill her, you know. Took me that long to get over those that resentment. And one wonderful thing happened to me. One morning I just woke up. And I was empty inside. I didn't know what happened. You know, they talk about the hole in the donut. And that's what I was feeling. You know, just nothing there. And I tried to get a hold of my sponsor. You know, I was afraid, really. I was thinking I was setting myself up for a drink or something. I couldn't explain it. And my sponsor wasn't in, but one thing he always told me, he said, you know, sometimes if you just pick up Alcoholics Anonymous and open it somewhere within the first 164 pages, read a paragraph or two, you'll probably find the answer. And so that's what I did that morning. And there was a word that jumped out on the page at me, and that word was neutrality. Well, there's nothing going on in my head, you know. I knew what happens when you put your car in neutral. You don't go forward. You don't go backwards. You know, you might roll down the hill, but you're just, you know, kind of sitting there not doing anything. As sponsor told me, he used a dictionary if I didn't understand a word. So I got out my 24th Collegiate Dictionary, looked up the word neutrality, and defined as not fighting opposing forces. You know, and then it hit me. This convention center in my head, for the first time in my life, was quiet. There wasn't anything going on up there. And I decided to read the paragraph. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Their sanity has been restored. See, I was afraid of sanity. I was in fear of sanity. I'd never been there before. You know, that feeling of peace, that feeling of calm. And then I turned, for whatever reason, my attention to my ex-wife. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, holy shit, you know, I was one sick human being. You know, I learned all that through my inventory, you know, my sponsor helping me through that process. And suddenly it dawned on me, you know, damn, my wife was one sick human being. Guess what happened? I felt sorry for her. I felt some compassion for her. From the heart, something from the heart. First time I ever knew what love was. You know, I felt sorry for her and I wished I could help her. And the only thing I could do was say, God, if at all possible, give to my ex-wife a glimpse of what you've given me. And like magic, that resentment that I had just vanished on the spot. It's never returned since. You know, that was the greatest peace. And, you know, I just felt filled up inside. You see, God entered my life. And that's when I had, you know, filled that hole in the donut. That's when I had what I call my spiritual awakening. When I realized, you know, that I was on collision course with a lot of people that, like myself, were probably spiritually, emotionally, you know, sick or disturbed, like myself. And I took on a whole new light on how I look at people today. You know, it was one of the greatest revelations for me. Still owe some amends to my ex-boss. He was transferred out of Fresno because of the problem we had. You know, I, of course, I had to tell the company and they moved him out. But, you know, me and my ex-boss, he and I used to drink a lot together, you know, after work. And about 6 years after all of this, about 6 years into sobriety, I get a phone call. He's down in Atlanta, Georgia. And he says, Tom, I got a real problem. I'm going through a divorce with my wife. She drinks too much, and I have a drinking problem. And I understand that you haven't had a drink in quite a while. How did you manage to do it? And I told him, you know, I told him about AA, what I found. You know, how he changed my life. And here's a guy that I hated like hell. You know, I know today when I talked to him about Alcoholics Anonymous and I 12-stepped him on a phone on that long-distance phone call, that was the only amends that I needed to make to him. You know, because, like myself, he was a sick human being and he was reaching out for help. And by the grace of God, you know, I was there to help him. You know, God's given us a wonderful, wonderful challenge, you know, to work with other alcoholics. It wasn't too long after that, I just happened to be down in L.A., he was down at a convention down there, and somehow we ran into one another. And, you know, we went out and had dinner together, and we talked about sobriety, we talked about the program, you know, no talk about our past, you know. That's all gone. We have this day forward. You know, what a wonderful gift. Service work. You know, if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, help set up the meeting rooms. Help make coffee. That's part of that 12 step. That's part of that guarantee we have. Yes, taking another drink. Part of that immunity. You know, when you get a little time under your belt, when you get, you know, some experience, when you get to know the big book, get involved in H&I. PICPC, you know, there's a lot of doctors and judges out there that know little about Alcoholics Anonymous. I was fortunate. I went to a healthcare provider that knew a little bit about AA from some experience of her patients, and she pointed me in the right direction. You know, we get to do that. You know, we get to reach out to the professional community and tell them, you know, ministers, tell them about AA, what we are, what we aren't. You know, if they've got members of their group. And that's been a reward, you know, being able to sit down with the judges in the drug court. I've done this several times in Fresno, you know, explaining to them what AA is, what we aren't, with doctors, with probation officers. God's given me a gift. You know, I came in here, and I always say, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous feeling like a piece of shit with the eyes. No, I no longer feel like that today, you know, and I didn't think I had a purpose in life. You know, when I wanted to blow my brains out, I just felt worthless, I felt hopeless, and there was no purpose for me. And I understand today, you know, God gave me a purpose, And it's one I cherish and one I honor very much. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't work any of these steps perfectly, but I think I did the best I could with what I had at the time. You know, when my sponsor told me to get rid of those things that are bugging me the most in that fourth step, I've gone back to that sponsor many times and say, hey, Bill, listen, this whole thing over here, now we got to get that off our shoulders, because, it was just kind of buried so deep. There's other things more glaring, and I've done that over the years, and I guarantee you today it's wonderful being a free man. I don't care how I die, as long as I die sober, and as long as I die with peace of mind. That's what counts for me. I've got some health problems, but I don't let that slow me down. I don't want anybody feeling sorry for me, because every one of us has, some kind of health problems, some worse than others. But we can enjoy the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we can enjoy reaching out and working with other people. I've gone through my story pretty fast. If I get wrapped up too much, I've been known to go way over, and I think Bill said something about maybe some questions and answers. I don't know if I have all the answers to any questions. Anything that I could say is only based on my experience and nobody else's. It's not necessarily the opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous, believe me. But, it's just based on what I've experienced in my life and my life as being a sober member of society today. And I hope a productive member of society today. So, Bill, how do you want to handle that? Does anybody have any questions? Come on, those people that are new. I know it's tough to ask questions, you're like I am, it's that shame. There's no such thing as a dumb question. There's no such thing as a bad question, because I guarantee you, if you think you've got a dumb question, there's probably four or five other people in the room that have the same question. Yes, sir.
Did you upload a poem to the
Not at first, but I guarantee you, I looked forward to being able to. Where I grew up, we had a lot of wedding dances, especially in the summer months. Where I grew up, getting alcohol was not a problem. It was my parents didn't drink. There's rarely any alcohol in the house. But I got my driver's license at the age of 14. My dad had laborers on the farm, and they'd go out and buy beer, and they'd drink in the bunkhouse after hours, and I'd go out and join them. Had two guys, his dad owned a pool hall, and I used to take them home on Saturday afternoon and take them by the pool hall because their dad needed them to clean up. And I'd say, hey, Jimmy, my dad wants know it's okay if you can throw a couple of cases of beer in the back of the pickup. And I'd give him a $5 bill. He'd bring it out, throw it in the back of the truck. My dad would never see it. So I didn't have any problem. No, I didn't drink daily. Only in the very end did I drink daily, when I was really going through the marital shit. I was really a weekend alcoholic. But I can guarantee you that, I could drink Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I liked the long weekends, I could carry it on through Monday. And I could put in 5 days of good, honest work for my employer. But Monday morning, as shaky as I was and not drinking, I was already focused on happy hour Friday afternoon. And I didn't care what happened the rest of the week, just as long as Friday hurried up and got here. I had that obsession, that overpowering obsession to drink. Any other questions? Like the good old days, my sponsor chose me. Bill didn't have any say-so over who his sponsor was. Dr. Bob didn't have any say over who his sponsor was. My sponsor gave me the big book and said, yeah, I'm your sponsor. You need a sponsor. And I stuck with him. I stuck with him for about 9 years until he retired and moved out to Fresno. And I do that to a lot of people I sponsor. I just picked one up the other day, and I talked to him on the cell phone on the way down. Yes, sir. Which? Very, very, very important. I'm not going to say I get on my knees every morning when I get up, but I'll tell you what, there's some point in time in the day, that I get close to God and, thank Him for everything that, all the rewards I've gotten from this program. Quite often, regularly I'm always taking personal inventory. And, if we did that four step, we end up with the four columns, the resentment, the cause, how it affected me, and so on. And when I finished my four step, I just erased, left those four columns, but erased all the names and places, and then I can fill in the blanks. And then I can look at those seven flashcards out there, the pride, the greed, the lust, the anger, the gluttony, the envy, the laziness, and see which character defect is triggering my mental condition, because usually it's two or more of those. I get a little lazy sometimes. It's a character defect I still struggle with. I like to kind of put things off. And then suddenly, the deadlines come, and you get a little panicky, and all of a sudden, the boss says something to you, and wow, the pride gets hurt. My pride gets hurt now because I procrastinated, and then I get angry. You see how it works? There's three defects of character right there that all intertwine, and I have to say, hey, listen, don't waste any time. Get this thing done. I'm getting better at it, I don't put things off quite as long as I used to. I used to wait until the night before. Now maybe I'll wait two, three nights before. But it's not as bad. I still have those character defects. It's human nature just to kick back, relax, not do anything. I hate those 2 o'clock phone calls. 12 step, God, I don't want to get out of bed. How that goes, that laziness, But I'll tell you, it's just about all the time that I've gotten out of bed at 2 a.m. in the morning to go on a 12 step call or reach out to a family that, has a problem. Sun comes up in the morning, I go to work, and it's like I never miss that little bit of sleep. I just feel good about being able to do that. It's a gift. It's a gift that, my Creator gave to me. So, as I say, and my sponsor told me that when I finished doing, the fifth step, he said, erase all those, everything in those columns, just leave the headings, the resentment, the cause, how it affected me, and just fill in the blanks as you go. And then look at those seven fuel cards placed on the table, the seven defects of character that I struggle with. And, come to the conclusion, that's usually how I do a 10-11 step.
So follow on to that, Tom. You mentioned prayer, and really what you said is maybe you don't pray every day, you don't get on your knees every day. But can you tell us about prayer? So, for example, do you get on your knees? Do you have any routines? Are there specific prayers that you say? Do you say them out loud? How do you feel about praying in front of other people? And how has that kind of changed over time? A lot of questions there. Prayer and meditation.
I don't hesitate to take a newcomer or sponsee through the third step prayer on my knees, through the second step prayer on my knees with them. I've done it in fellowships with a lot of people standing around. It may embarrass the hell out of them, but it doesn't bother me. Do I always get on my knees every morning? No. But I'll tell you, at night, I do take a review of the day, when I'm in bed. And I'll tell you, it is like, you think I'd miss if I told you this. It's like floating, because I can get close to my Creator. And I've said this before, there were times when, I drink a little bit too much and I get in bed, and the bed would just kind of move around. You feel a little ill, because you're lightheaded. But this is completely different. Bodily, I feel light when I do that, and there's And I can't explain the feeling, but there's an overwhelming feeling of peace and calmness, you know, and I review my day. If I screwed up, you know, I take a look and ask God, you know, how I can do better. If there's something that's really bothering me, you know, God, give me the strength. You know, my prayers are fairly simple. My third step prayer, you know, when I surrendered, you know, was God, help me. My life's out of control. I didn't have to recite the whole third step prayer. In fact, first time I did third step prayer with the first person I sponsored on my knees, I got more emotional then than when I said, God, help me, my life's out of control. You know, it meant more to me when I did that, and it still does today. You know, I still get very emotional when I'm working with another alcoholic. You go to that third step prayer, that seventh step prayer, God, take all of me, good and bad. You know, what a concept. I only thought God wanted good in me. You know, he wants all of me. Yes, sir. When I first did an inventory, I probably went back maybe 4 or 5 years. But since then, I've gone back to as early as I can remember, maybe 7, 8 years old. And the pattern was there before I ever took the first drink. You know, the feeling of being insecure, feeling of not belonging, the feeling of not fitting in, you know, the feeling of being inadequate. And that magic moment when I took that first drink when I was 12, suddenly that all disappeared. I doubt it. This isn't the time and place to get into my sexual inventory, but boy, there's a lot in there. But I think I had already started drinking, you know. And I needed that alcohol, you know, to get the courage to do some of the crap that I did. Normally, I probably wouldn't have done it without the alcohol. Yes, ma'am. You know, no, I haven't. One vow. Yeah, I lost my kids, you know, when I made that physical attack on my wife. Child Protective Services took my kids away. And then what happened shortly thereafter, it was less than a year, my wife had a mental breakdown. And by then I had been in the program about 10 months. And there was a review of the case, and I ended up becoming a single parent. The kids wanted me to promise that I would never remarry until they moved out of the house. And that was, well, my youngest one, she just left 6 years ago. I'm still single. I guess I got too set in my ways again, you know. My relationship with my kids are really great. I mean, it was a struggle at first. I didn't know how to be a father, you know, it was just, you know, and I relied on some people in AA to give me help. You know, I needed some babysitting services, and, you know, fortunately there were some people in AA that helped out until I could get my life rearranged. One of the things was to reschedule my hours at work, so, you know, I was working the same time they were in school and be home when they were home, and, you know, my relationship with my two children. My oldest daughter is 27 years old, and she's got 12 years of sobriety. She was 15 when she came into AA, and that was about 2 years after I got sober. So she's trying to catch up with me, but she's still sober today. So, you know, if you're young, believe me, if you're young, it does work. And one thing, you know, we have in Fresno, we're getting a very strong group of young people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are getting involved, you know, in a lot of activities. So, you know, just because you're 15 or 20, you know, don't think you're too young.
How do
and look at the place cards. You know, it really took time, to relate, to understand what pride was. And, of course, I had a sense of greed and lust. Of course, a lot of people right away think that lust is, sexual. It's not. You know, you have a lust for a lot of things, lust for money, lust for property. It's a love. It's an overpowering love, which goes hand in hand with greed. You know, and anger, whenever my pride is threatened, for me, I retaliate, I get mad, I used to have a hair trigger on my anger, gluttony, I buy one loaf of bread and I buy the whole bakery, and then, of course, the laziness for me is human nature, don't try to change that. I like to kick back, I like to sleep a lot, so that's how I learned how to recognize them. I had to relate to what's going on in me, Anything else? Well, I'll turn the meeting back over to anyway, listen, for your newcomers, those fairly new, give it your best shot. As I say, I never worked these steps perfectly. I just did the best I could, at the time. And, as I picked up more bits of information about myself, about my creator, and about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can imagine, I can expand them. I often say I took the steps in any number of orders, would suit me at the time until I could finally take them in order, and that's what counts. Anyway, I would like to thank you all for allowing me the privilege of being of service tonight, and I'll turn the meeting back over to Bill.